Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, April 29th. I'm Ray Graff. If you're looking to make some improvements around the house, today's show is for you. We welcome back licensed professional engineer and construction specialist Darren Tracy. He's ready to answer your home maintenance and repair questions. Darren has extensive experience in construction, renovation, plumbing, property management. He joins us to offer his expertise. It's a popular show generally when he's on, although he's a last-minute fill-in, and so you never know. I mean, it could be crickets. 800-348-2551. I didn't have enough time to promote it. 800-348-2551. If you have a home improvement question, or you can email voxpop@wamc.org. It's Darren Tracy. It's me. It's you. It's the phone. We'll see you right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Time to talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement with Darren Tracy. Darren is a licensed professional engineer with experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He's a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He runs the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. Got a question for Darren? Maybe we'll play a little Name That Tool today. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email the program as we roll along at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back.
Thank you.
You know, this morning, regular guest had to bail out. Who do I call? Darren Tracy. I had another guest within a moment. It was amazing. You know what? Thank you for being here on short notice. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
What are you up to today?
Working on a deck in the Mechanicville area. The deck was attached to the house, and it was not flashed properly, so the band joist on the house started to rot out, so what I thought was just a small little project became a major project.
Oof. That happens a lot, right?
Often.
So did you get a scope of work before you started?
Well, I had a scope of work before I started, and that was just going to be some minor repairs and restaining, but then I got into it, and I discovered this rotted wood, and then it was a relatively small platform, maybe 4 feet by 6 feet with some steps. We pulled that away from the building and found an electrical entrance wire from the meter to the main breaker box was attached to the deck. Strange. They carved out a little cavity on one of the wood members of the deck and stapled the main entrance cable to that. And whoever did it nicked the insulated sheathing on the outside of the wire.
Ooh.
And then over time, this house is 30 years old. The deck is probably 30 years old. Water migrated into that electrical cable. And because it was pressure-treated wood, there's copper in pressure-treated. That copper made contact with the aluminum conductor and created a galvanic reaction. So the aluminum conductor basically disintegrated and looked like dust.
Wow.
Yeah.
Does that happen a lot, where someone putting an electrical conduit in nicks the wire?
It's not uncommon, especially on the interior. You use a lot of wire staples. You could get a nick in what's called the Romex, the insulation on the outside, but you don't have the water problem inside, so that's typically not a problem where you have that galvanic reaction. Sometimes you'll get a problem outside when you direct bury a cable from the utility pole coming into the house. It'll be a rock, and you don't backfill with sand. You backfill with a rock or something, and then over time that will move, and that'll create a nick in the sheathing and then create corrosion, and that causes heat, and then that causes a problem usually at the most inopportune time.
Our guest today is Darren Tracy. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. All right. On short notice, I did not know that you were going to bring a prop for Name That Tool, but you brought one.
Yeah, I reached into the toolbox. I didn't have much time. I saw this. Maybe not the best Name That Tool I've ever brought, but something that you can work with here.
Well,
there
I
you
described
go.
The last one a couple of months ago in much too detailed fashion, and we had a lot of correct answers. I'm going to be vague and unprofessional, which is pretty much my credo, actually.
No, you described it well, and people understood what you're saying.
But I would love people to not the first person to get it, but you never know. All right, so this thing is red, and it's, can I say what the letter it looks like? Does it?
I think that's okay.
It looks like a C to me, or it could be a fat U, and it's got a threaded... Looks like a threaded piece of metal that goes in, and you can adjust the length of that that's sticking up. So at the bottom of the center of this thing, there is a bolt. A bolt. And it goes right up through the middle of the U or the C, and it goes higher and higher depending on how much you turn it. Now, I guessed what it was, and I was wrong. So if you're guessing something at home, it may not be as simple as you think. I have no what Darren told me what it is. I still don't have any idea. The number here is 800-348-2551. It's Name That Tool. It's very exciting. Darren Tracy is here, and let's do an email, and then maybe we'll jump to the phones or take a break first. This is from Ted in Valley Falls, New York. Question for Darren. For a four-season, 20x26 sunroom addition we intend to make to our house, what kind of foundation makes the most sense with respect to the cost of construction and long-term maintenance? An insulated Alaskan slab, piers, or a standard foundation with crawl space? And that's from Ted.
Not piers. I'll rule that one out. An Alaskan slab, 6-1, half a dozen another. An Alaskan slab, for listeners, is a slab on grade, concrete on grade, and it's insulated around the perimeter to prevent frost from getting underneath the slab. Mm-hmm. And it's thickened around the perimeter. It's called a haunch. That's part of the detail. And then the other option is a conventional foundation that goes down to below frost level, which in our area is about 4 feet. That's probably the best way to go. And then if you ever want to turn that into some other type of living space besides a sunroom, you'd have access underneath for running utilities. That's probably the way to go, a conventional foundation. A little more expensive, but provides more flexibility and options in the future.
And will it last longer than a slab?
Probably. If an Alaskan slab is built properly, well-drained soil, it can last a long, long, long time.
Okay. This one from Bridget. We have a septic smell in our basement. We have not been able to find any leak, and I'm wondering what you would suggest.
Take a look around to see if you have any P-traps in the basement. I know in our basement, occasionally we'll have a septic odor, and that's because we have a water treatment system that discharges into our waistline, and actually we don't use it anymore. Our potable drinking water is cleared up. It had a lot of iron in it, but over time it's cleared up.
Mm-hmm.
So that P-trap will evaporate out water, and you'll get gases coming back. So that's the first thing I would look at is any P-trap or any openings in any types of pipe that connect to your sanitary system.
Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's Home Maintenance, Repair, and Improvement. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. All right, a couple minutes here before the first break. You ready to play Name That Tool? You ready?
Yeah, I'd like to add another comment to the last call.
Sure, go ahead.
You could also look for any cracks in pipes because if the drainage pipes going out to your leach field have a crack in them or the joint is not sealed with glue properly, you could have some odors backdrafting through that connection that's not tight.
Okay, and what's the best way to check for a crack?
Just take a look. run the toilet and see if you
seepage or
yeah,
whatever.
See if it, maybe a drip here or there. Okay. Close inspection with a flashlight.
Okay. Let's play Name That Tool before we take a break. Mike is in Latham. Mike has a guess. Mike, go ahead.
Well, can I ask a question first? Can I hear it? Can you shake it?
Can I shake it? Wait a minute.
I'll shake it.
I'm going to check with the judges.
Oh, shake it, yeah.
He's shaking it. I'm shaking it next to the mic.
He truly is. I don't hear anything.
Can't hear it. All right.
Okay.
All right, so I thought I knew what it was, and if you shook it, I would have known, but I was going to guess monkey wrench or like a plumber's wrench, but that doesn't sound like it.
No, and shaking that is probably just the spiral connection in the housing of the wrench would make a little bit of noise.
So let me ask you a question. Is Mike in the right neighborhood as far as the shape and size of this thing?
In the right neighborhood in that it's a tool, function, not generally.
Yeah. All right, fair enough. Well, you were close. At least you're on planet Earth, Mike, and thank you for the call. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. I wouldn't have got it either. I mean, he had to tell me what it is. We'll be back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here, joined by Darren Tracy as we talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement. The number is 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. All right, next contestant in Name That Tool, and then we'll go to the questions. Tracy is in Amsterdam. Tracy, go ahead.
Hi. I do believe it's called a C-clamp.
I thought so too, Tracy. Tracy said C-clamp, and Darren said I was wrong, but that was my guess too.
Yeah. No,
oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, it's not a C-clamp, not a conventional C-clamp closer than a crescent wrench or adjustable wrench.
Well, Tracy, thanks for trying on that one. We'll get it. Oh, we'll get it all right. Let's go now to Sharon, Connecticut, and Maria. Maria, you're on.
Yeah, my house was built in 1948, and it still has the original fuel oil tank in the nice dry basement. Do I need to get a new one? It's not leaking. I don't see any paint peeling. I don't see any rust. But should I be thinking about getting a new oil tank?
Probably not.
Probably not. Good. Oh, really?
Probably not. You don't see any rust.
I don't see any rust. The basement's nice and dry. Nothing's leaking. And if it were to leak, where would it start leaking from?
It would probably start leaking from the bottom. And the reason for that is that water is more dense than fuel oil. So it would hang around the bottom.
Oh.
And then water has oxygen in it, and that can precipitate corrosion. So you could take a look down at the bottom of your tank. Just tap along gently with a crescent wrench, an adjustable wrench,
uh-huh,
or something like that. Just very gently to see if there's any rust down there. Look with a flashlight, and if you don't see any, you're probably okay. But that would be the place to look. And you said an 80-year-old tank. Initially, I thought you were going to tell me it was buried outdoors.
No.
It's like, oh, that would need...
Even though it's 80 years old, it should probably be okay?
Well,
like I said, it's probably okay if you don't see signs of corrosion on the outside. But you could take a look down at the bottom of the tank. It's probably a rounded bottom. And check more closely for corrosion down there with the flashlight. And if there is some, maybe call in your fuel supplier to have them look more closely. If there is none, you're probably okay.
All right. Maria.
Is it better to keep it? Like usually during the summer, I let it run. Until like a quarter down. Should it be kept full all the time so it doesn't condensate or what?
Generally, that's not a bad idea. Your temperature is pretty stable in the basement, so the condensation problem doesn't exist that much down there unless you open up your, basement windows and let warm air come in, and that's a whole different issue. But, better to store it with fuel oil in it than not.
I've never heard about this business, it's just basic chemistry, I guess, water heavier than oil,
yeah.
and water gets to the bottom.
Right.
Now, with a, you know, a snow blower or a lawnmower, the gas powered, you would put some dry gas in. Is there an equivalent for an oil tank?
Not to my knowledge. Not
no.
to my knowledge. That happens in all sorts of tanks. If you have a compressor in your garage to blow up tires, often those compressor tanks will have a drain valve on the bottom to drain off. You will get condensation there, and there will be some oil, too, mixed in. But, yeah, at the bottom of the tank. Same thing in a motorcycle. I rode my motorcycle here
nice
today.
Nice bike.
Motorcycle gas tanks are known for rotting out down at the bottom of the tank, especially where there are seams, because that's where water hangs out.
So keep it full is a better plan?
Keep it full, yeah. Especially like a motorcycle can be outdoors and more prone to the condensation problem that the caller raised. Yeah.
So and we'll get to the next call in a minute. Just for my edification, I always tell my son, you got to keep at least a half a tank of gas in your car in the winter if it's outside.
Yeah,
and
for
I
that
never,
reason.
Never knew why. Now I know. Well, thank you for that. Let's go to Troy, and Lauren is up. Lauren.
Good afternoon, Mr. Tracy, Mr. Graff.
Hello.
I'm glad to get through because I was just hanging on the line last time when the show ended.
Oh.
I wanted to thank Mr. Tracy for talking about energy saving through windows. And kind of, you know, correcting people about how much they're really going to get that way. There was a company out of Boston, Princeton Energy Partners, back in the 80s, and I worked on phone sales, if you can believe it, trying to convince people that sometimes small retrofits in their home to measure the volume of air with all the techniques which have become the NYSERDA program today, would save them their fuel money, and yet they'd say, well, I'm going to get my, you know, $13,000 or $15,000 windows, and that should do it, when actually it's just a fraction of your loss that happens through the windows. Much more, you should get that free. Everyone's always advocating for it, but it's really true. The free NYSERDA household measurement with pressurization and smoke gun and all that, because you'll find out it's about volumes of air that you're heating. And that's what you need to know. Not, you know, whether there's a bit of air going in or out your leaky windows.
Have you done the NYSERDA audit, Laura?
Oh, yes. In fact, our home was stripped down to the studs, as it's called, at the beginning, the entire upstairs.
Yeah.
Because that's under the awnings or whatever it's called. The attic is part of the house.
Right.
And then also we had the, so the foam was up there, and then new sheetrock because it was this old kind of wall. I don't know what they call it. Plasterboard or something back from the 40s.
Yeah.
And then they also did under the downstairs all through the basement and the kitchen ceiling because that was an integrated porch that came into the house. So it's really, it's very worthwhile and you earn your money back so quickly. And also Mr. Tracy mentioned last time you can cover the windows. It's true. You can get some kind of insulated foam and just put a pillowcase type thing over it and stick them in your windows if you're really concerned about a leak. That's much more efficient.
Darren, you want to comment?
But you can imagine how many times I had phones slammed down on me back in the day. And now it's the NYSERDA program.
Cool. All right, Darren, you want to comment?
Yes, briefly, thank you for the call, Lauren, and thank you for mentioning NYSERDA in New York and Mass has an equivalent service the state provides for home energy audits. Now we're getting out of the nasty cold winter, and it doesn't cost as much to heat or cool your home in this shoulder season, so you might not think about energy improvements as much as you would in the dead of winter, but get a hold of your NYSERDA and have an energy audit done on your home if you haven't already, and save some money, make your home more comfortable.
Lauren, thanks a lot for the call. The number here is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today, and we'll go to New Paltz. Cheryl, your turn. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering, I don't even know if you can help me out with this, but I have two appliances. One is a gas fireplace, and the other is a split unit. So the split unit is a Diamond Air, which I hear has been taken over by Mitsubishi. And so I've been trying to maintain it, but if a part goes bad on it, they say that they can't, they can't support it anymore. So is that true? Is there anyone that would help me? And with the gas fireplace, they say that they don't support that anymore either. I just bought it from Lowe's, and I don't even know the company. I still have the, the booklet that came with it. But,
okay.
And it doesn't turn on. I use it mostly for heat in the winter. Do you have any thoughts? Do I have to buy new things? Everybody wants you to buy new things.
Boy, don't they.
Sharon, I certainly I wouldn't buy anything new until something that you have doesn't work anymore. And regarding parts that are available, I have no inside knowledge on that. You would just have to talk to the manufacturer. I do know that Mitsubishi makes a really good product. You said a split unit. You're probably referring to a mini split. It's a combination heating cooling unit. They are becoming very popular. So that's all I really can add to this.
So don't fix it if it ain't broke.
Don't fix it if it's not broke. Don't scratch where it doesn't itch. And if it does break, do your usual internet searches for parts. And best of luck.
Yes, and I hope you don't itch too much. Thank you, Cheryl. 800-348-2551. Became a Medical Monday there for just a moment. Let's go to Keith in Ashfield. Keith, you're on with Darren Tracy.
How you doing? Yeah, I got a question about roof insulation. My father had a summer home and it had some damage to the roof. When they re-shingled it, the insulation was originally up into the rafters in the top of the house. And after they redid some of the plywood, a lot of that stuff fell out. Of course, they didn't fix it because it wasn't part of the job. And my father wanted me and my brother to re-insulate it, but he was just going to have us put it in the rafters right above the ceiling. What's the difference, pros and cons on that, and if the house was originally built with the insulation?
Okay.
All right. Well, typically you would have...
Can you give me some information?
Yeah. Typically you would have insulation right above the ceiling rafters in the attic space. That's the best place to insulate. And then the space above would be unconditioned space, what's called unconditioned space, and would be cooler. Now, one reason, why would you insulate up into the rafters? One reason you would do that is if you had a cathedral ceiling, which is a tapered ceiling, and you wouldn't have that attic space. It would be eliminated. So you need some insulation, and you need to put it someplace. So you would put it up in between the rafters in the rafter bays. So if you don't have that cathedral ceiling and you have just a regular attic space, then the best place to insulate is at that level above the ceiling joists and not up in between the rafters.
All right.
And a problem with...
Sounds good.
Just to follow up on that, a problem with insulating between the rafters is that you need an air space above the insulation. So when that warm air moves from the inside of your home to the outside in the winter, it's going to condense, another condensation issue. It's going to condense. And if it doesn't have some place to vent away, breathe away, that's going to condense on the underside of your sheathing and rot out your sheathing. And that may be why your roofers had to replace sheathing, because it was up too high and there wasn't an air space for air to flow in through the soffit at the bottom and out through the ridge at the top through a ridge vent.
And additionally, he was heating the attic for no reason than the way it was set up prior to that, too.
Right. That's no need to do that.
All right, Keith, thanks a lot for the call. Got an email here, Testy, from Jack, who says, I called in at the beginning of the show. Delighted to hear you had a construction engineer who might have good advice for starting me on a project, adding stairs up to an attic. After several minutes on hold, and then listening to Name That Tool, and then going to a break, I gave up. If you want to hear my question, call me. Here's my number. Well, Jack, that's not exactly how the show works, but I did see your call, and I was about to go to your call when you gave up. Here's what. We have two open lines. If you call right now, we'll go to you next. The number is 800-348-2551 because we don't want to irritate Jack. Meantime, Marie in Rochester. Marie, you're on.
Hi. I have a gutter problem.
Gutter.
The vertical gutter from the top, from the main gutters, comes down, and there's a pipe that comes out from that to the lawn, because it isn't attached anymore to any more gutter sewers. It was quite unsightly. It was very long, and what they did was replace it, cut it off, and replace it with a shorter gutter. But that gutter isn't long enough to take the water away from the building, so it's now pooling in front of the building. In the bushes and the rocks and the stones and everything that's the ground cover there. And I'm wondering what can be done to get it to go out farther and get away from the building.
Okay. It's not good for the water to pool next to the foundation because it tends to introduce water into your basement. Okay, a couple of ideas. One is that you can reinstall that pipe away from the building, but just bury it in the earth a few inches down in pea stone such that you don't see it. So you don't have that unsightly problem. You don't have that problem of mowing around that. So you could do that. So that's one idea. Another idea is that where the water is pooling, you could trench with a shovel away from your foundation, assuming you have enough elevation to do so, and make a small little trough away from your pooling area to a lower area away from your foundation.
Marie.
Yeah, I think it's a grading problem. But okay, those sound good. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call. Very much appreciated. 800-348-2551 is the number. Darren Tracy's our guest today, and thanks again for showing up here on short notice to be here. What's up?
I just wanted to add to that last caller, if I could.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, of course. Yes.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So she mentioned that there's a grading issue. What you could do is put on a pipe extending away from the house 10 or 15 feet. And if you still had a grading issue, you could dig a basin out there in that area, maybe a couple feet deep by 3 feet diameter, and put number two stone in there, some sort of a reservoir so water could drain there if she didn't. And then it could slowly leach out over time.
All right. Let's go to Peter in Ashfield, Massachusetts. Peter, you're up.
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
Can you hear me okay?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so I have a cabin in Ashfield, Massachusetts, and it's built on a sloping dirt floor. And there's one corner of the cabin, the bathroom, that's very inaccessible, even though I've insulated the downstairs. How do I insulate that bathroom? Do I put some kind of insulation tiles on top of the bathroom floor? Or can I crawl up there and spray in some cellulose or foam or something like that?
I'm having a little bit difficulty envisioning what you're saying, putting insulation on top of the floor, but I don't think you would want to do that. Somehow you want to get down below the floor level into the crawl space, and you could use a rigid insulation board, extruded polystyrene, or spray foam. Basically, you want to isolate the cold temperatures on the exterior from the interior. And I know crawl spaces can be difficult. Sometimes you have to pull up a floor to gain really good access.
All right.
Okay, I put in the insulating foam boards downstairs, but there's just this one corner that the contractor couldn't get up into.
Yeah, maybe you could try a spray foam where you could actually spray it in. There's a two-part kit, with canisters, about 2 gallons apiece. That's home improvement do-it-yourselfers can use. Spray in there. Maybe you can spray reach in there. Yep.
Peter.
Okay, is that cellulose foam?
No, that's typically a polyurethane foam. Cellulose wouldn't work too well in there if it's in contact with dirt. You mentioned dirt floor. And then you'd want to isolate that dirt floor from any insulation you have with a vapor barrier, like a 6 mil poly type vapor barrier. Definitely isolate that dirt floor from your insulation.
All right, Peter.
You know,
oh, go ahead.
He wants to send me an email with a photograph. I might be able to provide better information on that. My email is darren@westbranchinc.com. I'll take some emails if they're relatively easy to respond to.
And this is not for business.
No,
this is just out of the kindness of your heart. All right.
Not looking for more work.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is our number. And let's do this thing. It's underwriting and then Vox Pop and then more of you. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Darren Tracy joins us to talk home maintenance, repair, and improvement. And we have a guest here from Mike Q in Glenmont/Albany on Name That Tool. Sounds like, says Mike, a flywheel puller or something to remove a pulley from a crankshaft. Can't get through on the phone. Well, what do you think?
He's correct. Ding, 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 ding.
Okay,
ding.
It's
a not a flywheel puller. It's not big enough for that, but it's a puller of sort. So you mentioned a C shape. The ends of the C, the open ends of the C, go around whatever you're trying to pull out, and then the bolt you can turn to tighten up, and it effectively pulls the ears of that C out and helps, say, remove a bearing from something or other.
All right, now I'm going to read this, but I think you just talked to this guy, Peter in Ashfield, right? I have an old cabin in Western Mass. The ground floor is built on a dirt slope. One corner is hard to access. Way up in the corner, I have to put in foam panels. Is that the same call?
Yes, the same call, and he definitely wants to get a vapor barrier in there on top of his dirt floor.
You know, we have very smart listeners. They'll always double up. They'll send the email and the phone call. You know, if I lose consciousness for a moment, then sometimes you get two questions of the same variety answered. Valerie says, who's the professional that repairs cracks or possible water damage, etc., on what I believe are plaster ceilings? They're not wallboard. Do painters have this background, or do I need to find a different pro before painting?
I'd start with a painter.
Really?
Yeah, there are, I mean, professional plasterers, but I'd start with a painter.
All right. This is from Mia in Greene County, New York. Are there any low-cost options to fixing a leach? All right, here we go. Are there any low-cost options to fixing a leach field and drainage on property? Is it okay to have the sump pumps go into the sewage? There are drainage issues on the property due to a very high water table and clay ground. The water is very hard, high iron. We have complex water filtration system that is old and needs replacement, and that's from Mia in Greene County.
Okay, same answer.
No. Nothing cheap.
Well, I will add to that. You definitely do not want to add any other sump pump water to your
sewage
septic system because it sounds like it's already having difficulty draining, so you don't want to saturate that leach field anymore. You know, discharge your sump pump water out into your lawn someplace else, not in your leach field. That's a big no-no.
Okay, Michael in Mount Tremper, New York says, we have a bathroom in our unfinished part of the basement below the waistline. I assume that's probably water line, right? I don't know.
Yes, waistline, drain line.
Okay, it has a pancake pump, and we had to replace the pump last year. The toilet always smells of sewage, and I'm thinking a 30-year-old pancake just stinks from years of waste sitting in it, as when the float kicks on the pump, it doesn't completely drain? Question mark. What can we do for the odor? Question mark.
It seems like there's a break in the connection between the bottom of the toilet and the pump, not unlike a caller earlier in the show who was smelling sewer odors. Somewhere sewer gas is escaping. I'm not particularly familiar with your sewage ejection pump, but you could check your toilet, the seal between the toilet and the flange. That's one place to check. Any other connections, check them for tightness.
All right, and I believe the same, Michael, although I'm not sure, writes in, we're thinking of replacing our rear deck and enlarging. Steps down off deck, you put you on a septic cover. Output line from septic to leach field runs around the deck to the leach field on the far side. I'm worried that putting footings for a bigger deck would be risky without damaging any part of the septic system. Any thoughts? How far can we cantilever on existing joints to extend the deck? No idea what I just read.
Yeah. You definitely wouldn't want to put a post, a foundation post for a deck, on top of your septic system. Nor would you want to cover the access hole in the septic system, because then it would be a problem anytime you want to have your septic system pumped, which should be pumped every 2, 3, 4 years, depending upon usage. You could have a hole cut in your deck, an access panel. Remove that section to access your septic tank. Other parts of that question. One thing I can say about decks is if you're building a new deck, according to the building code of New York State, the posts need to be 4 foot below grade if the deck is attached to your house. Okay, if the deck is not fastened to your house, it's freestanding, the posts do not need to be 4 feet below grade. They can more or less float.
Okay.
So that might be one building option that he could use in that particular situation where he didn't have his post going down and hitting a septic tank.
All right, one more email, and then we'll jump back to the phones with Darren Tracy. Jan in Albany writes, this winter when it got really, really cold, my ceiling in the front corner of the house developed a small frozen area. I had someone look in the attic to see if there was a leak. They found the rafters had ice on them, so super freezing in the attic. What can I do to improve that condensation doesn't freeze on my living room? And then a little more info, I have blown insulation in the attic. It's very thick.
Okay. Oh, well, that's good that they have... I was going to say add insulation and make sure you have a good air sealing. So since you have the insulation, it's the air sealing aspect. What happens, air will come in your soffit area, which is the overhanging portion of your roof, beyond the exterior wall of your house. Air will come in there, and instead of traveling above the insulation, sometimes it can rifle in below the insulation and create a problem. Also, warm air from your house escaping, moving up into the attic space. That needs to be sealed off as best you can. Going back to NYSERDA in New York State, a blower door test would help identify any leaky areas. But it's really good to have a home buttoned up tight, just like you're wearing a winter jacket.
Yeah.
In the wintertime, if you're unbuttoned and it's cold out, you feel that particular area. Same thing with
right.
a home. You button up, it's got to be air sealed.
Darren Tracy's our guest today. It's home maintenance, repair, and improvement. Final snarky email here, then we'll go back to the phones. Kay in Cornwallville says, what's the best type of hammer to use on my TV after a Mets game? I'm thinking a sledge. Thoughts?
Well, you're probably the expert on that. You're a Mets fan, right?
Yes. I'd do the old Elvis method and shoot the thing out. What do you think?
Shoot the thing out. I don't know. I watch playoff hockey. This time of year, baseball, beginning of the season, I'm not interested. I'll watch the series. But this time of the year is playoff hockey. That's where I am if I'm watching sports.
They won last night, so they're good for at least a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Oh, boy, this could be trouble. Let's go to Argyle. It's Merle. Hello, Merle. Hello.
Hi, how you guys doing? I had to go out on the deck to hear you.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, nice, though. This has to do with fill on an old 200-year-old house.
Sills on a 200-year-old house.
I leaked in the roof, and it went down, and I got at least 2 feet of bad sill. Is this a handyman special, or do I have to get a contract?
Jeez, how handy are you, bro?
It depends on how handy you are. If you're halfway handy, you could probably. If you're halfway handy, you could probably tackle that yourself and with good results.
Yep.
And you can also always get into it and try removing the sill. And if you find out it's too complicated, you could hire a contractor at that point.
Give it a shot. In other words,
yeah, why not,
Merle? What do you think?
Okay. Do you have to jack up the studs, the joist? Floor joist that sits on the sill.
You may have to jack them up, or you may have to temporarily support them.
They're mortised into the.
Go ahead, Merle. Go ahead, buddy.
I think he said they're mortise and tenon. You may have to jack them up.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
Ah, well, he was answering the question, Merle.
I'll finish answering.
All right.
So you may have to jack them up. Or you may have to temporarily support them depending upon the degree of rot.
All right, buddy. Thanks for the call. 800-348-2551. That's the number. And it's our friend Darren Tracy here today. Let's go to Greg in New Paltz. Greg, you're on.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me all right?
Sure. Go ahead.
40-year-old original AC outside unit for my 1,200-square-foot condo. Until last year, our heating and cooling contractor would come yearly for maintenance. Last year, he said no, he didn't want to mess with it in fear of doing something that would wreck it. My question is there, what's your opinion on that, and is there anything we should do about it? It's working fine. As I said, it's 40 years old. We're super lucky, I guess.
I'm just thinking of the service that he would provide to the unit, maybe clean the coil. Do you know what service he actually does to the unit?
No.
Okay. I would try to get a hold of another contractor.
Okay.
And that's what I would do. And I keep using it until it wears out, breaks. Try another contractor.
All right, Greg, thanks a lot. You know, 40 years, I'll tell you, it seems like yesterday to me.
Yeah, it's a pretty good run. It's interesting how time accelerates as you get older.
I find an accordion effect.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's very drawn out and slow.
Like this program?
No. Well, not this particular program, but there have been those. And then sometimes it's very fast.
Have you heard of Jane's Law?
No.
That's a pretty interesting concept about time. Because as you get older, each day is a smaller proportion of your life.
Oh, yeah.
Like if you're 4 days old, one day is 25% of your age.
Right.
As you get older, it's a smaller and smaller slice. It helps explain why time seems to go by faster.
That makes sense.
Jane's Law.
I had no idea were involved in philosophy and such, but this is good. Sandy and Troy, you're on with Darren Tracy, philosopher.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I have a house that's 100 years old. It's brick. And I wanted to find out about the need to repoint the bricks. I see little bees making little holes in the bricks, and sometimes I fill it in, but I know there's certain kinds of mortar for certain age homes.
Did you know that? No. Okay, well, go ahead. we're taking notes on the question here.
Yeah.
So you have bees getting in holes in the brick house, and that's an issue. We see that a lot in my house, too.
Yeah, you need to apply preventative to maintenance to old homes, any home. I mean, they all need maintenance, and they cut into our free time, our fun time.
So what do you do, though?
You repoint that.
How do you do it?
I brought in one of those, name the tools, a striker joint, rake out some of the mortar on the joints that's failing, and then obtain some mortar that's appropriate for the circumstance, and that's kind of a long conversation, and then fill in the gap between the bricks, which is called the mortar joint. Try to be neat. Don't get the mortar on the bricks because that doesn't look good. So that's a short answer.
Is this something Sandy should try on her own?
You could do that home, as long as you're not up on a ladder, okay with heights. If that's the area that needs some attention. But yes, yeah, definitely a halfway handy homeowner operation. Yeah, repointing.
What do you think, Sandy?
You know, I just finished sanding floors and painting a room, so I'll give it a try.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than that, and it's, you know, you're outdoors.
Yeah. Sandy, what Darren was writing down and mentioning when you started your call is he has a degree in philosophy, which I did not know. Yeah. It's very interesting. Well, thank you for the call, and let's see. Let's go to Glenville and Shannon. Hello, Shannon.
Hello, how are you?
Good, you're up.
Thanks for taking my call. Got a question. I have a 1,200-foot square foot single-level home, and it does have insulation in the ceiling of the home. And people have stated that I should put some more on there. Is there such a thing as too much insulation?
Not really. Not really.
Okay. Okay. I was just wondering if I should lay out, roll out some more. That was my question.
No.
It has 6 inches now.
Has 6 inches?
Yes.
Oh, that's definitely not enough. Yep. That's definitely not
enough. Okay, what would you recommend?
Get R38, whatever adds up to R38 at least. Six inches might be R19, something like that. Don't quote me.
Okay, I will look into it.
General.
R38.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, or more.
All right, thanks for your help.
Thanks for the call. So you have a master's in
philosophy. I have a master's degree in philosophy.
Which is perfect for your line of
work.
Which
is perfect for carpentry.
You're working on a deck today.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
All right. We're doing
it's a long story.
I'm doing a show in June, just booked it, on the philosophy of artificial intelligence.
Okay.
And that's going to be a fun show. I love philosophy topics. I had no idea you were so wide-ranging.
Yeah, I had to take a liberal arts course when I was studying engineering. And do I have time for just a couple minutes?
Well, you have 12 seconds.
No,
go ahead. Go ahead.
Okay. And it was taught by this great guy, a World War II vet, Plato's Republic. And I just got hooked in philosophy. And after I got my engineering degree, went to SUNY Albany and got a master's degree in philosophy.
It's a real moneymaker, isn't it?
But after 1 year, I found out that I was not a full-time philosopher. So I finished it at night school. It took me about 6 years.
It's funny because most philosophy majors wash out and end up in radio, which is only slightly less lucrative. John and Hudson, you have to make it very fast. Only about 15 seconds
here. Okay, yeah. I have a painted wooden porch with a lot of rot. I'm going to replace the panels with PVC, either trellis or sheet. Do you have some advice for me?
The floor or the trellis?
No, a porch. It's a wooden porch.
Okay.
It's the skirting around
a wooden porch. Okay.
Apparently, my sub pump was exhausting water there that caused the rot.
You could use PVC. You could use, if you use wood, use pressure treated lattice. Lots of people like the idea of like the square pattern. Pressure treated lattice looks aesthetically more pleasing to some people.
Okay, John, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you for the call. All right, Philosopher Tracy, thanks for being with us today, man. And we'll see you again on your regularly scheduled show, which is, 6 weeks from now?
I was just looking at that today. I think it's July 1st.
July 1st. There you go.
Yeah.
Well, thanks again. Support comes from Saratoga Plan, working to steward and protect the Saratoga region's farms, forests, and waters, supporting a healthy environment for people, wildlife, and working landscapes. SaratogaPlan.org to learn more. And WAMC On the Road, our new programming initiative bringing public radio in person throughout the WAMC listening area and face-to-face with listeners in their own communities. WAMC.org for more information. Just did one of those a couple weeks ago at the Landis Arboretum. Nobody was hurt, so it was a success. Thanks to Darren Tracy once again for being here. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Thanks to Andrea Leong, who screened the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, this will be fun. We'll learn about Albany's Pine Bush Preserve with Neil Gifford. So if you've always wondered about the Karner Blue and all the good stuff over there, give us a call. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.